Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Happy New Year to everybody out there. Please shovel salt. Pay attention to all of the directions on the road in case we get a light dusting this weekend. Luke Jones joins us now to discuss, you know, something that you and I don't get together often in like August and say, got a big preseason game here this week. Luke, who am I going to bet on? How should we go? But this whole weekend is always wacky. It's the last weekend of the year. It's the most important weekend of the year if you're a coach trying to hold on to a job, if you're a player trying to lay down your last piece of tape, if, you know, whatever that is. But certainly making the playoffs for the teams that have nothing to play for, like the Ravens, this is I said treacherous is the word I used earlier in the week. It kind of is, because every time I say to you, sit them, you say, dude, they almost all have to play, and they all are going to have to play for 60 minutes, and the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to come in, and for all 60 minutes, they're going to try to beat their ass.
Yeah, I mean, you can sit some guys, and we found out Wednesday officially what had been anticipated all week, and Vegas and the sports books had anticipated it even, with the Steelers being a favorite throughout the week, but Lamar Jackson not playing Saturday. Smart. I'm sorry, it's a no-brainer. I really don't fathom, understand, comprehend how anyone thinks it's a good idea, and that suddenly 2 weeks off compared to 3 weeks off isn't a rust factor, you know, isn't a rust concern. I mean, that's part of it, but you want to keep the best player in the league in 2023 out of harm's way in a game that doesn't mean anything for you. So, but beyond that, they have a bunch of guys banged up, you know, guys like Kyle Hamilton and Marlon Humphrey and guys that I would anticipate sitting out. So you can sit some guys out, but at the end of the day, you only have a 53-man roster with a couple practice squad elevations that you can throw in there. So, you know, you can't just play 22 guys and say, oh, okay, well, that'll be fine. That doesn't work that way. So inevitably, and if you go back to 2019 and you can pull up the game book and see, the Ravens rested roughly 8 or 9 guys in that game, and a couple of them were injured. But beyond that, starters played and key backups played, and they still beat the Pittsburgh Steelers even without Lamar Jackson and Mark Andrews and Ronnie Stanley and Marshall Yanda and Earl Thomas and Brandon Williams and Jimmy Smith. But, you know, for the most part, their starters, the rest of their starters played and played a lot and played hard, and they got a win. So the difference here is it's not a full-blown preseason game, one, because of the roster, and two, I wholeheartedly do believe the guys that are out there, beyond just the motivation of playing for jobs or stats or incentives in some cases, they do have a chance they can knock the Pittsburgh Steelers out of playoff contention. And while I'm not going to sit here and try to sell that as this overwhelmingly appealing element to an otherwise meaningless game, it does make it a little more enjoyable, a little more intrigue to it, at least knowing that Pittsburgh is one of those teams that does have plenty to play for this weekend. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But going back to the big picture sense of this, one, again, no brainer to keep Lamar Jackson out. But two, this is where it is like a preseason game. It's going to be 3 hours of Ravens fans, Ravens coaches, the Ravens brass holding their breath, making sure that you don't lose any players that are all that terribly critical to a playoff run. So, you know, I mean, it's part of it, right? Other teams around the league are resting players. Joe Flacco's not playing in Cleveland, for example. Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. So there's a lot of that going on. But at the same time, as I said at the beginning of the week, you really can't rest that many guys. So it is something where you're going to be holding your breath, and there is going to be some anxiety hoping that you get through the game without any major injury issues.
I think the hardest part is like, starting to talk about, okay, so what really happens here? I mean, people are going to gather. The Steelers fans are going to gather. The Steelers are going to come out all fired up because they need to win. Everybody in the world's watching, right? It's a national TV game. It's the only game that's going to be played at that hour on a Saturday afternoon. So I'm sure especially people betting money on this, which is a little bit kind of crazy. You'd say, what's the motivation for the Ravens to win, right? And you'd say, well, you think these guys – go out there and try to, they're never trying to lose ever. I mean, they're just aren't, they're not wired that way. It's not, this isn't a movie where you throw the game and 53 guys go out there and do that. This is a game where they all go out there and don't want to get beat by the guy in front of them. So, for that, I will venture to say something unfortunate will happen on Saturday. You know, something that will cost somebody the game 2 weeks from now. So somebody will get injured in some way that won't be able to. It's football. I don't know how that jives, or you know, how John's going to be with that, or how they're going to be with that. We sat here and talked about Bradley Chubb getting injured in a 30-point game the other day, and the coach basically saying that was pretty dumb afterward. And Lamar Jackson running in the linebackers when it was a 30-point game, and you and I and Coach Harbaugh never says he's dumb, but we can't. Of course, his brother's not dumb at all, right? His brother's about to win a championship, so it's hard. All Harbaugh's. Who's got it better than us, Luke?
Nobody, I guess, right?
Nobody,
Michigan,
right?
Or Michigan or the Ravens,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so, but I would say this, for this game here, it's as unique a game as the franchise will play, and I don't know if there's any right or wrong way, to your point. Guys have to play. They have to play, and they have to play hard, and they have to play not like they want to win. They have to, on every snap, go out and play football. And it's different than a baseball all-star game, or, you know, pick up tennis at the, you know, when Pam Shriver comes in here for an exhibition. This is like real serious business between teams that don't like each other. You know, just Steelers guys are playing not just for the season, but they're playing for their jobs as well, laying down the tape that everybody gets to lay down here now 17 times a year. You know, I do have some concerns about it being the Steelers, and I know the league sets it up so that it is Hatfields and McCoys on this last game, and half the time it means nothing for half the teams, right? Like, this goes on every single year, but in our position, we don't want anything to sort of rock the boat of what might happen. And to your point, and I'll get to the point here because I know the most important thing we always do here is make the Pro Bowl announcements, aside from watching the actual Pro Bowl festivities, competition, whatever they call it these days. Can't believe I actually almost flew to Hawaii to see that one point on somebody else's dime, thankfully, but I didn't. You know, Pro Bowlers are going to have to play in this game. I mean, serious players are going to play and put themselves in 30, 40, 50, 60 snaps. I mean, I guess the one thing you'd say is, well, they'll get less snaps. And I would think to myself, well, the backups are already starting in many, many cases, right? So, like, the notion that some of these guys are going to get a real limited amount of snaps. I, you know, you love the snap counts after the game. This will be an interesting one to see how it gets played.
Yeah, no question about it. And John Harbaugh even alluded to this. I think it was on Monday where he talked about what they've been doing at offensive tackle, for example, where we've seen Patrick McCary rotate with Ronnie Stanley. We've seen Morgan Moses or Daniel Falele rotate in for Morgan Moses on occasion. So
we don't think that's weird on the defensive side, right? But on the offensive side, right?
Yeah, it's very strange, right? I mean, it's something that on the defensive line has been going on for years. I mean, decades you've seen that. I mean, go back to the 2000 Ravens. I mean, they had their starting defensive tackles, but yeah, Lionel Dalton and other guys would rotate in
Big
there.
Keith,
I mean,
Big Keith Washington.
Yeah, Keith Washington, absolutely. So that's something that you've always seen on the defensive side. Again, that lends itself to what I was just saying. You're not just playing 11 guys on defense for 65 or 70 snaps. You're going to rotate guys in, but I do think you'll see more of that rotating. Some guys are going to sit out entirely. I mean, that's obvious. You know, Kyle Hamilton, I fully expect to sit out again this week. I mean, he's not practicing as we get closer to game day. Some other guys like that, you know, Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen are interesting. Two guys who made the Pro Bowl, by the way, and good for Patrick Queen, by the way. I mean, we talked about that a lot in the offseason. Everything that was happening with Lamar Jackson or other players the Ravens have had that have been first round picks and unhappy or not having their fifth year option picked up. There's a case where he showed up for everything. He had himself a great year. He's in the Pro Bowl and he's going to get a lot of money from somewhere, probably not Baltimore, probably going somewhere else in the offseason. But, you know, you look at Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen. Will they both sit out entirely? Or is it a case where, you know, maybe one of them plays? Trenton Simpson, their third-round rookie, who was kind of drafted with replacing Patrick Queen next year in mind. You know, that was something Eric DaCosta didn't say flat out, but clearly that was the motivating factor there. So you want to see some young guys like that. You want to see some, you know, whether you're talking rookies or second-year guys who haven't, you know, fully developed just yet, you'll see some of those guys mix in. But, you know, it really is a case. I mean, like I said, you go back to that 2019 finale, which was it's almost eerie how similar the circumstances are. I mean, the Ravens
so
were the
forgettable.
Number one seed.
I don't remember much of anything about
right,
it.
Right, but right. But that said, Nestor, that was the Steelers team that actually had a chance to still make the playoffs. And Lamar Jackson sat, as I mentioned, Lamar Jackson, Brandon Williams, Mark Andrews, Mark Ingram was actually hurt at the time. Marshall Yanda, go through the list. And Jimmy Smith, it was about eight guys that they rested. But if you look at the snap counts for just about everyone else, they scaled back a little bit on some veteran players here and there. But for the most part, everyone else played. They beat the Steelers 28-10 that day. You know, RG3 got the start for the Ravens that day. So I think that right there is a reminder of, you know, even with some backups in there, this is still a very, very good Ravens team going up against a Steelers team that, look, I'll give them credit. They've been better the last couple of weeks with Mason Rudolph, who will start again. They've actually scored over 30 points in back-to-back games, which the way the Steelers have played for a couple years now is kind of crazy to think about them having that kind of an output. But, you know, this is not a game that I at all think the Steelers are just going to, you know, win and the Ravens are going to go through the motions. In fact, I'm picking the Ravens to win this game. That's how much I think about the Ravens, even with taking a few of their best players out of the equation.
Well,
so
it's interesting how John be coaching it that way and the team be coaching it that way. We're not going to lose to the Steelers this week. And the backups, you're going to go out there and you're going to kick their ass. And that's what we're going to do. And you're not going to play as much 2 weeks from now, but we're going to know you can play. And, you know, right, that's the point of even younger guys playing, is even in the preseason, we all are like, you know, yawning and like, you know, changing the channel and whatever. But guys are out there trying to become the next Geno Stone. Every one of them, right?
No question about it. And it's so difficult. And you made this point. I'm glad you did, because it was a good one. But it's so difficult to downshift when you're talking about professional football, right? When you're talking about full contact football. That's why the Pro Bowl had gotten to the point where it was just a complete joke, you know, because you had guys who understandably were trying not to hurt each other or get themselves hurt, but it just resulted in an awful product. I mean, at least with baseball or basketball, there's still skill being displayed, right? Whereas, you know, in the NFL with the Pro Bowl, how it had been until now, which it's flag football and all that, you know, you just looked at it, it's like, what is this? Like, this isn't even the same sport. At
well,
least
hockey,
baseball,
you did 5-on-5 all offense, and that was kind of fun because the games would be 11-9. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah.
So nobody played any defense at all. With football, we would routinely get together every Super Bowl Radio Row, which, by the way, promotion, Radio Row Week is going to be huge around here. Crab Cake Row, stay tuned. We're going to have some things, and I'm going to tell you about those things. But we would always get together. First thing we would do is on that Sunday night, plug in an equipment, watching the awful Pro Bowl and making fun of it. And yeah, Look, Patrick Queen's not making fun of it. I mean, to make a serious point here, and I was in the car headed over to the Beaumont for dinner, and my wife checked down on the phone. She's like, Patrick Queen made the Pro Bowl. And I'm thinking, well, good for him. Like, of all the names I saw, a little shocked about Hamilton, because the young players don't usually get the kind of that. I mean, that's a special thing. I mean, even I remember Ray Lewis was the third honorable mention in 96, and I was like, hey, maybe one day he'll be a Pro Bowler. And all of it's quite dubious, but it is a distinction and an honor. And when it comes out, it's a big deal. Ravens.com set the camera up in Eric DaCosta's office, and they did the whole acting thing, the whole blocking and give me a hug thing. It's a big deal for a player, and I think it's even more for Queen, who was a first-round pick. We sort of forget that. We sort of forget him the minute that Roquan Smith got here, because he was not Ray Lewis, right? And, you know, to your point, he's going to make money somewhere else. But this is for all the guys there, I feel the best for him. And I don't even know him. I've never really met him.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think Justin Madubuike is a third-round pick and a guy that, you know, there had been some big expectations for him. I think it was even Peter King, maybe going into his second year, actually listed him as a dark horse for Defensive Player of the Year. And while clearly that was a couple years premature, but now you look at what he's done as far as leading interior defensive linemen in sacks and the year he's had. Tyler Linderbaum made it. I can recall you and I had so much discussion when the Ravens drafted Hamilton, a safety, and Linderbaum, a center, in that first round 2 years
ago. With the Hollywood Brown pick, as we kind of looked at it, right?
Yeah. Right. We talked about positional value a lot, and we've seen that. And that's part of what's so fascinating about how this Ravens roster is constructed, specifically on the defensive side of the ball, where they have these two off-ball linebackers, one with a $100 million contract, the other who just made the Pro Bowl himself and is probably going to get a $75 million contract from someone this offseason. But, you know, I talked about that idea of positional value, that, okay, if you're going to draft a safety in the first round, that's fine. He's got to be really, really, really good. Like, if he's just okay, like some first round picks.
Matt
Well,
Elam
Harper
wasn't
wouldn't
even
get.
okay, right? I mean, right?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. That's when it's a big whiff. I said with Linderbaum, that was such a pivot for the Ravens in terms of investing in the center position. We had seen so many Matt Skura types going back to post-Matt Burke retirement that I said, Linderbaum's got to be a Pro Bowl caliber center, or this is not a good pick in terms of how you value that position typically. Well, he's made the Pro Bowl in his second year, and it's a well-deserved Pro Bowl. So great to see that for the first year, guys. And look, we make fun of the Pro Bowl because of the game itself and now what it's become with flag football and dodgeball and all these different things that they're doing. But the honor, even if the process, the voting process gets picked apart, and at times there are snubs, at times there are guys that make it. Look, I actually think it's kind of ironic that Justin Tucker made it this year. I think back to some other years where he absolutely should have been the Pro Bowl kicker and wasn't. Whereas this is a year where I'd say, you know, I don't know if Justin Tucker certainly isn't his best season. I think we all would agree with that. I think Tucker himself would agree with that. But reputation, we know how that works. So, but I'm with you for the guys that have never been there before talking about, you know, their first Pro Bowl selection, Kyle Hamilton, who's been, you know, I'm interested to see if Kyle Hamilton's an all-pro. I mean, that's how good of a season he's had. And I think other people, he's on the best team in football, and he's done it under bright lights, and everybody mm-hmm. knows his name now. Other than being a Notre Dame football player, which used to be a big deal, it's not anymore. Yeah. But once your name gets mentioned, to your point, once Peter King writes about you, people look at you a little bit, mm-hmm. maybe evaluate you a little differently. That's the hardest part of being Kyle Hamilton and getting voted in the first year. Getting voted in the first year is the magic. And
it is.
He's way under the radar of people are thinking special player, the Lamar Jackson, the defense. Everybody like to have a 6'3" flyer that can play five different positions on the defense and is smart enough to get himself aligned as a 22-year-old.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that
right.
That's and to your point, first round draft picks and taking flyers on safeties and centers or whatever, this organization needed to get back to first round draft picks being something that Eric DaCosta gets bragged about and talked about as executive of the year and all that stuff, because that's not happening when you're drafting Matt Elam. That's not happening when Hollywood Brown's barely getting on the field, or Bateman's barely getting on the field, or Rashad Perry. I mean, I'm going through some names there. These are all ones. Now, take your flowers. It's been 4 years since the last time they were this good. They're this good because they have this many guys healthy in week 17,
mm-hmm.
first round picks, pedigree guys. It's nice having Matt Ibike even Mark Andrews, they're pedigree guys too. Third, fourth round picks. Let's not top 100 players in all of college football in any given year is a big deal, but it's different being blue chip. And some people thought Kyle Hamilton was a top five football player and didn't know how to use him.
I was just going to say that. I mean, there were people that thought he might be the best overall player in the draft, and he fell to the middle of the first round. Now, it wasn't the same fall as Ray Lewis late in the first round or Ed Reed late in the first round, but I mean, Hamilton fell into their laps, and I think that was a case. We talked about it at the time. They had Chuck Clark already. They had just signed Marcus Williams. They had Geno Stone on the roster, who they thought was a solid backup. That was not a position of great need whatsoever, but when it was a player of that caliber falling into their laps in the middle of the first round, they just said, we've got to take this guy.
I don't think they ever saw him as a safety, though. And maybe Eric, the first night out there at the complex, maybe he spoke to that, you know, initially as it says safety, but we don't think he's – I bet he didn't say that at this point, and I'm sure they said that at that point, that it's not just about the secondary, just about – like the way Chuck Clark played, you said Chuck Clark, and I'm thinking, we like Chuck Clark. You like Chuck Clark, smart guy. They loved him. Put the dot on him, all of that. He was the quarterback of their defense and a low pedigree guy against the grain of how other people felt about him. They didn't – it's like they looked at Lamar Jackson, and they weren't looking for Joe Burrow because they didn't have the first pick, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so they were looking for something different, and – you know, look, this goes back to when DaCosta used to speak to me and we used to be in each other's homes and ride together. And so, you know, like back when we were friends in the Pearl Jam era, he would always tell me about the baseball scouting he did He was the first person to ever say Sig Meidel's name to me and pronounce it properly because he knew Sig. And he was all in on the baseball analytics because he's a baseball fan. He's a Red Sox. He's also a basketball. He's a big Celtics fan too. But he was into the science of the analytics and how baseball changed its sport by measuring things differently. And 10 years ago, bunkied up with this guy named Elias and Meidel that he would later go on to recommend over a dinner with John Angelos that he hire them. Boy, this will be a good book one day. But it's true. And Eric is now, and not speaking about it because he doesn't speak to people like you anymore, or people like me, certainly anymore, but that he's out in the front of whatever they're doing on drafting, whatever they're doing on thinking differently, right? And now they're in the catbird seat to say, we're doing Moneyball here. We're doing football Moneyball. We're not going to tell you how we're doing it, but we're picking first round winners and we're picking against the grain because we're taking safeties who aren't safeties, quarterbacks who aren't running backs, and centers who go to the Pro Bowl when we pick them. That's an impressive resume if there's a parade here on February 13th.
Sure, no question about it. And look, I mean, it still kind of begins with you drafted Lamar Jackson, right? I mean, how many teams passed over him, including yourself when you drafted Hayden Hurst earlier in that first round in 2018. But you drafted Lamar Jackson, and he's one of the very best players in football. He's going to win a second MVP in his first five full seasons as the starter. I mean,
Got
that
more
speaks for
MVPs
itself,
and he's got
and it
playoff
makes.
wins. And so I can
Of
say that out
course.
loud too.
Of
And
course. If
that better
you want to sound
change.
if you want to sound like a hater, sure.
But
But
that
yeah.
has to change though. That has this is the only
Sure.
time you can change that. You could do all of that.
Sure.
Look, dude, we did this with
It's everyone
Flacco when he
else.
threw the winning is
Yeah.
Flacco elite after he threw the pass to take him to the Super Bowl, after he'd been in the Flacco had won playoff games, and we're like, how much money do we give him? I mean, he didn't win the big one. And he's not Tom Brady, and he's not, look, I mean, the measurement is, to your point, you sat here and said it last week, and this is where we are with them. This isn't about hating. This isn't about them throwing me out and, me not being at the Super Bowl, any of that. This is, they better go win the Super Bowl. This is no, that's over now.
Sure.
All of this is, well, we'll just win a game and lose the championship game at home to Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or Joe Flacco. Like Lamar better not lose to any of those three names this month, or he's gonna have to hang on that for another year. The way Flacco
Yeah.
had to hear it forever, the way Manning had to hear it about Brady, probably still today, even though he's doing a pretty good job on television. Brady won a whole lot more. Brady was the better quarterback than Peyton Manning, and I'm not even really sure that's true. But the rings don't lie.
Sure. And as I've also pointed out that other than Patrick Mahomes, every other young quarterback in the league is in the same exact group as Lamar Jackson. Josh Allen and Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow got to a Super Bowl. He didn't win it.
It's almost like Flacco never got one, right?
Yeah,
Like Bill
well,
Cohen said, right?
because it was 11 years ago, right? I mean, that's why it's just this strange,
Well, the strange thing
amazing.
is when he rolls out for the playoff game next week, it's not Super Bowl MVP Joe Flacco. It's old guy
It
out here
is.
somehow still doing it, is
Yeah,
what it is,
it
right?
is. It is. By the way, as we're mentioning Joe Flacco, did you hear his quote earlier in the week in Cleveland? They were asking him
He said
about.
he was young enough to make babies like I did as a
He
teenager,
said,
right?
"If I had messed up in high school, I could be one of these guys' dad." Just thought that was such a joke quote. But yeah, I mean, look, Lamar's not hiding from it. He knows that legacies are ultimately defined in January. It's this whole team at this point. John Harbaugh has won two playoff games since the Super Bowl, which was 11 years ago. Justin Tucker, everyone else from that Super
The
Bowl team
last
are
time I
gone.
spoke to John Harbaugh, like really spoke to John Harbaugh, the night that he lied to me at the pool down in Florida, he was five different times in the same conversation. He was apologizing to me for losing a playoff game, like for how it all fell apart. Because he's always perpetually trying to keep his job in some way, right? I guess.
Sure.
And nothing would be more horrific than them losing 31 to 14 somehow because Lamar turns an ankle and they can't win 3 weeks from now in the first quarter. Like whatever
Oh,
goes
yeah.
wrong, there's nothing that can be acceptable. No injury, no coaching decision, no missed kick, no drop ball in the end zone that's going to be acceptable if they don't win a Super Bowl here. And like, I have never gone on the radio and said that. I mean, like, because it's the second time around. They're really good.
the competition is perceived to be lackluster. Even Mahomes will come in here with a diminished version of the Chiefs. They're going to be on the road. All of these things, all the health, all the momentum, all the talking points now. And that's why, getting back to like right here, not out on the dash, out on the windshield, but on the dashboard, got to play Pittsburgh for 3 hours. And they can't sustain an injury on the O-line, an injury on the D-line, somebody to, and I'm not talking about carted off and life-threatening. I'm just talking about a bone bruise that means you can't play 3 weeks from now against Joe Flacco. That's all.
Well, and that's why, agreed, but there is one injury this team sustains and you say it's over. And that's why Lamar Jackson's not playing Saturday. I mean, it's that simple.
That's why we can talk into all we want. The fourth quarter the other day.
All we can talk all we want in terms of the rust factor, how you prepare over these next few weeks, all those different things. It's nearly impossible to quantify that, right? You can find examples of past teams who rested starters, even rested starters for multiple weeks, and made it to or won a Super Bowl. You can find examples of teams, you know, Tom Brady, quite often they played. Tom Brady's a different kind of quarterback than Lamar Jackson. You know, he's standing back in the pocket and throwing and not taking off and running around in the way that Lamar does. But there's examples of teams like that played their starters and didn't do a whole lot of the resting. And once, you know, that's why I've said this whole rest versus rust thing that I'm already sick of talking about, and I don't mean with you, I just mean hearing about it from everybody. It's whatever you want to make it to be, right? I mean,
we're going to judge football in the first three plays when they go out on offense that night under the lights. If they have a three and out, it's all the rusty, you know. If somehow four plays they've scored a touchdown, it's a 4-play 78-yard drive, and Flowers is dancing in the end zone, and they're up 6-0. Then, oh my God, John fixed them. You know, it's very reactionary, not just Twitter or Facebook or it's bar stool, but it is the amount of pressure that is put on these games now that they've made. It's pressure every week, and we got to be great. And there's pressure on John 2 days ago at a press conference just to get through a meaningless game this week. They'll feel all of that, but they haven't ramped it up and felt this kind of pressure as that team in 5 years. And to your point, there's only 10 guys left from that team.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't many guys left. But to go back to just finishing the thought on what we were talking about with the rust factor, go back to that 2019 Steelers game book. Most of their starters on defense played. Quite a few of their starters on offense still played. And I get it. You know, the focus is on Lamar Jackson. But just about everyone other than Hollywood Brown played well in that Titans playoff game. He played really well in that game. Go back and look at his numbers. I mean, he was one of the few guys who you'd say probably wasn't rusty. He, you know, he just needed more guys to play like him. But, you know, it's not as though they rested half their team in that finale. So that's part of the reality of the regular season, as opposed to it actually being a preseason game where you have a 90-man roster. So you go out there, you've got to play hard. You can't downshift. I think downshifting and not playing hard is how you get guys hurt, quite frankly, because you're going to have a Steelers team that's absolutely trying to win and trying to make the playoffs. And they actually have a few different paths to the playoffs. You know, it would certainly help them big time by winning. You know, their odds plummet without a win, but, you know, they're trying to make it, and they've looked a little bit better the last couple of weeks. So for everyone that's going to play on Saturday, from Tyler Huntley on down, you know, they're going to play hard and they're going to try to win, and they want to try to knock their division rival out of the playoffs. But in the big picture sense, yeah, you're holding your breath for these next 3 hours. I have no idea how to quantify the rust factor and to say, well, if you play in week 18, you're not going to be rusty in the divisional round. But if you sit, then you're definitely going to be, you know, I think that those are talking points that people just want to say whatever they, you know, whatever their opinion is without any justification for it. But the one factor that you do talk about that absolutely sinks their chances is if Lamar Jackson gets hurt, if a couple other of their absolute best guys get hurt, that takes, you know, their Super Bowl hopes take a major hit in that light. So, you know, you try to keep guys out of harm's way. Guys, you do play hard, go through it. 3 hours. It's football. It's their livelihood. It's not like they're doing anything differently. Tyler Huntley's played games for this team, unfortunately, quite frankly, because of Lamar's injuries the last couple of years. But they're going to go out there and play a football game, and you hope for the best. They're going to try to win. If they don't win, no one cares, right? You're going to turn the page and then get ready for the bye week where they're not going to be off. They're going to practice. I've already heard from team officials. They're going to practice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday next week. They'll get a little bit of downtime during the weekend, and at that point, they'll see who they're going to play. So they still don't know. It's still an unnamed opponent. As much as we speculate about which teams, we know they won't play Kansas City in the divisional round because the Chiefs are not locked into the three seed. So we know they won't play the winner of Miami or Buffalo on Sunday night. So, but beyond that, you're kind of still preparing for all the other possibilities. So, play a game on Saturday and get home amidst the snow or slush or whatever it ends up being, and then you get to watch football the rest of the day Saturday or Sunday and kind of see how it's going to play out.
Luke Jones is here. He will be there and more drive than most of the people in the stadium. I would not want to be in my 513. This would have been the one week I get $10 for my seats and stay home and try to stay dry. Everybody, stay healthy this weekend. Stay dry. Take the Ravens' best advice and just be ready to be there 2 weeks from now as they sell out the game and the whole world watches as football all weekend here. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour and bringing it back to light with Crab Cake Row beginning Radio Row week on February 5th. We'll be talking a lot about that next week when we won't have an opponent, but at least we'll have a pathway for the Ravens and we'll have other opponents and certainly six really good football games next weekend in the NFL playoffs and a national championship game as well that the Harbaugh family's participating in. It'll be interesting to see if John runs out to Houston on Monday night. Luke, he's going
he
to the
is.
game,
He
right? He's
is.
got to go to the game, right?
Yeah, he
It
revealed
fits
that
into his calendar, right?
it actually does with having the bye week. I mean, players are going to have off. From what I understand, players are going to get Sunday, obviously, off, and I think they're going to get Monday off. I think they will come back either Tuesday or Wednesday. I don't know that for certain, but they'll get a couple days of downtime after the Steelers game, and then they're back at work. So that does afford John Harbaugh the opportunity to see his brother try to win a national championship. He was asked about that, and he certainly fired up about it, as you'd expect, the Harbaugh family with Michigan in their blood, right? So he'll get a chance to be there in person.
Yeah, I heard the Michigan song about 1,000 times on Monday, and now I just and then good luck to all the Harbaughs, including Jack. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.